Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go again. The elephant in the room is race, and it showed up in a courtroom with Paula Deen and in a Swiss boutique with Oprah. Two different reasons, in two separate countries thousands of miles away. Paula Deen admitted to frequent use of the N-word with staff, friends, family, and colleagues. Oprah strolled into a fashionable Swiss boutique and was refused service when a clerk thought the purse she wanted to see was too expensive for her taste buds. Let's clear the record. Electing a popular and prolific black president does not make this country post-racial. And now it doesn't make the world post-racial. Race is embedded in the DNA of our society, even though it is merely a social construct crafted by the slave owners of the 1600s. We'll explore the reasons why race still matters with Mary Frances Winters, a veteran diversity professional who has personally felt the sting of racial injustice and understands why it persists to this day. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. Thank you so much for listening. I'd love for you to make sure that your friends and colleagues listen to the podcast or archived version of the show. It's so important, I think, for us to understand the origins of race, why it still matters, and why we're bringing up the subject of Paula Deen and what she did some time ago, how that has impacted her business, and how a billionaire, otherwise known as Oprah, can go over to the wedding of her friend Tina Turner and be pretty much turned away at a Swiss boutique. We're going to talk to a very well-known diversity professional, Mary Frances Winters, a friend of mine of many years, about why these things still matter. Two things I'd like for you to do in preparation for the show, if you're listening to the archive or certainly after the show. Number one, I'd love for you to go to my website, msfconnect.com. That's www.msfconnect.com. And go to the articles section of the website. If you look at the menu bar on the homepage, you'll see articles. And there are free articles there. There is one in particular that I'd love for you to read called Which Term Is It? It's part one and part two. And it gives terminology related to the African-American experience and which term is appropriate and not appropriate. And the N-word is included in that two-part series. So I'd love for you to read that. There are other articles there, too. President Obama's recent comments about Trayvon Martin and the impact of his case, that is also included. You can actually see the video clip that he rendered about two or three weeks ago, and the transcript, all of that is at that website. So I'd love for you to go and take a look at that. Secondly, at your convenience, I'm really thinking this is must reading for lots of people. I'd like for you to go to the library or buy it. You can buy it at a reduced cost now. Paperback is here. Doris Kern Goodwin's new book, new in terms of the last 2 years, I'd say two or three years, called Team of Rivals. This was the book that was the foundation for the movie, the Steven Spielberg movie, Lincoln. I'd love for you to watch that movie as well. But I particularly want you to read the book. It is a very long book. And you, like me, can go to the library and cheat and get the unabridged version, audio version. Actually, it's like 36 CDs. You can get it at the library just like I did and listen to them one by one. This book, I feel, truly captures the mood and spirit of the United States in the first half of the 1800s, and certainly the last half of the 1700s when the country was formed, straight up to the Civil War. This is important because as I've read this book and read certain parts of the book, I am eerily shocked at how the verbiage, some of the language, and certainly a lot of the political maneuverings are still in play today, some 150 years later. So I'm not going to spoil it for you. I would love for you to read it, and it's going to be my goal to have Doris Kearns Goodwin on my radio show in the future to really talk about this book and the impact of it. And certainly I encourage you to go and see the movie as well. But fast forward, we're now talking about 2013 and incidences that took place over the last 20 years as it relates to Paula Deen, and now most recently over the last, what, 2 or 3 weeks, with Oprah Winfrey. My special guest, diversity professional from the Maryland area, Mary Frances Winters, thank you so much for being, again, a guest on my show.
Thank you for having me, Carol. I really appreciate it.
Well, you had an experience similar to Oprah. I'll fast forward and talk about Oprah's case first. Oprah was attending the wedding of Tina Turner, one of my sheroes, who has married her longtime boyfriend, Erwin Bach, in Switzerland. Oprah was over there with intimate guests who were invited. She went into a very fashionable boutique, was looking at a very expensive handbag that cost $38,000 U.S. dollars, and was told by the clerk, oh, no, that's too expensive for you. And the clerk apparently then was trying to direct Oprah to purchasing something that was less expensive. Now, Oprah went in there, as she said, fully dressed. She had everything on except her eyelashes. And she's known certainly around the world, but obviously, as an African-American, that does not mean that everybody in the world knows who you are. And so she thought about it probably for a few seconds, thought, well, I could come back here and buy up the whole store, like the character did in Pretty Woman, but she decided, no, I'm not going to give this clerk that satisfaction. She walked out, probably told a couple of people, and then one thing led to another. It became viral and then ended up on talk shows, et cetera. So that happened in Switzerland. We think of these incidences all the time happening in the United States, but that happened in a European country, a very prestigious neighborhood, obviously, but certainly race matters there. Mary Frances Winters, your incident happened here in the States. Share with us what happened and when.
Yes, it was so interesting when I heard about Oprah's situation, how mine was just almost identical, except the purse wasn't $38,000. We were talking about a $100 pair of gloves. I was in a department store, and I was looking at the gloves that were on sale in an open display in the middle, you know, section where they had a lot of gloves. And I didn't see any that really struck my fancy. So I turned and I looked to a locked display case where there were gloves. And I said to the sales representative, I said, oh, I'd like to see some gloves there. And she said, oh, those gloves are much more expensive. So I thought to myself, well, I didn't ask her how much the gloves cost. I just said I'd like to see them. So she didn't start to open the cabinet, the lock cabinet. I looked at her, and she looked at me, and I guess she thought that her explanation that they were too expensive was good enough and that I should just continue to look at the gloves that were on sale. So I, after having that experience, I did not buy the gloves. I walked out. But, you know, Carol, it's always the question in the back of your mind. Did she think I couldn't afford the gloves because I was black? Did she think I couldn't afford the gloves because I was young? At that time, I was much younger. It wasn't the way I was dressed. I was dressed in a business suit. And so I don't really know, but there was a prejudgment there. Or maybe she just thought, in her own mind, that nobody should pay that kind of money for gloves. And so I'm not going to let this woman pay more money for gloves than I think she should. So, you don't really ever know mm-hmm. what the real reason is. But for people of color, you know, there are so many of these incidents that happen. One Christmas Eve, I was buying something very at the last minute at a bookstore, and I was in a long, long line because everybody else was buying something at the last minute as well. And everybody in front of me was asked, do you want to join the membership club of this bookstore? And mm-hmm. everybody was asked. So I knew the spiel. I knew what was going to happen. I knew how she was going to ask me. Well, she didn't ask me. So I thought, that's interesting. So I said to her, I said, well, you didn't ask me if I wanted to join the membership club. And she looked at me and she said, no, I didn't. And So then I said, well, was there a particular reason why you didn't ask me? You ask everybody else. And she said, no. There was no particular reason. So those are the moments when you say, do I call a manager? Do I forget about it? It impacts our health. It impacts our mental well-being. It impacts the stress levels that we have in life. So there are a lot of ramifications to these small, what we sometimes call micro inequities, that indeed
right.
end up being bigger inequities as they relate to how they impact our psychological well-being.
And again, I've urged my listeners to read that very long book, A Team of Rivals. I'm sure you've read it or heard about it. You've seen the movie Mary Frances Winters. It gives, for me, the backdrop in detail about race in this country. Even those who fought for our freedom were not quite convinced that we were truly equals in beyond the sight of the law. And that's why the civil rights movement had to be born some 100 years past the Civil War. So a lot of this is embedded in the social construct that started in the 1700s, certainly perpetuated by Thomas Jefferson and others, where he had one quarter or one drop of black blood, you were considered black. But the implications from a legal and economic and a social perspective are really persistent. I can remember, I wasn't even born when this happened. I turned 60 next week. Yay, yay, yay. My mother telling me and my dad telling me about my father, who was an excellent swimmer. And then in the military, he was a Tuskegee Airman. And in probably the late 40s, I was born in 53, so this was before I was born, going into a store in Detroit and wanting to look at scuba diving equipment because he was interested in scuba diving. And the gentleman, the clerk, looking at him just with absolute amazement and, again, refusing to let him see the equipment, because how in the world can this black person, A, know how to use this equipment, and B, know how to swim well enough to put the equipment on and then use it? So that goes back more than 60 years. But again, the embedding part of it really goes way back to the 1600s and the 1700s. Any thoughts about that, Mary Frances Winters?
Well, yes. It's truly, truly embedded in our psyches of this country, and I think other countries as well, that, you know, black is less than, it's inferior. Color actually is the trump card for me over race. In every culture, the darker skinned people are treated less well. So even in Europe,
right.
you're looking at, you know, people being associated with their skin color and judged by their skin color. Now, the woman who the sales representative indicated that the race had nothing to do with it, and it may not have consciously had anything to do with it for her, because so much of this in our subconscious is in our unconscious.
Correct.
There's a lot
Correct.
Today that we've talked about in terms of this unconscious bias, but it stems
right.
historically from, you know, from back when we talked about, if you've got a drop of black blood, and when you look at any country, Brazil has all of those kinds of that kind of history as well, in terms of looking at people and typecasting people by the color of their skin. So I was in Munich not too long ago, and a woman was describing something to me, and she said, "Oh, he's very, very black," and I was just taken aback that she would just say that. But again, she didn't understand. She didn't understand why that characterization might have been offensive to me. I was just describing him. He was very, very black. But when you say that, for most people, that has so much more meaning to it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the issue. And we don't talk about race. You talked about Trayvon Martin and the president who came out and spoke on behalf of the family and spoke about how that could have been him. And he was criticized. Mm-hmm. And you know what the criticism was, Carol? The criticism primarily was, why are you stirring it up? Why are you stirring
right.
up conversation? Well,
right.
because we need to stir it up. We need the reason that we're stuck, and I talk about as being stuck in this country, in this society, as it relates to diversity, as it relates particularly to racial diversity. I call race diversity's four-letter word, because nobody wants to talk about race. We can talk
right,
about all the
right.
other dimensions of diversity, but when it comes to race,
right.
we don't want to talk about it. And, you know, that comment,
and
why are you stirring it up? We
yeah.
need to stir
yeah,
it up because it's still an issue.
It's a huge issue, and that's a big thing that gets me, and we will probably have a future conversation since you're going to be my recurring guest on my show because of your expertise, about what about inclusion? And when you use the word inclusion, do you actually dilute the impact of race? But that's another show altogether. But again, I go back to your example, what happened to you, the kind of feeling, the ambivalence in terms of people running away from this whole conversation about race and never wanting to say, oh, no, I wasn't doing that because of discrimination. I was doing that because of your particular economic, socioeconomic background, and thinking that maybe this was too expensive for you. Well, embedded in that is race. And that's why I said this book by Doris Kearns Goodwin really lays the foundation in such an artful way about why this subject is so important and certainly was definitely embedded in the Civil War. And we skip ahead. Every time I read every page, I said, my gosh, we're still dealing with a lot of these issues today, just in terms of our perception of each other, regional characterizations about the North and the South, et cetera. So we fast forward, and now we have Paula Deen. And this really hurts me because I like Paula Deen. I really like her. I saw how a young man, 9 or 10 years old, whose parents had started a cookie company because his brother passed away, and this young man really likes to bake cookies. And so the company started in memory of his brother. He was on Oprah's show when she was on had her daily talk show, and Paula Deen was actually a guest on that show one day, and they surprised this young man and brought him on the air with her, and it just brought tears to your eyes. And so I really had a great fondness, he's an African-American young boy, and I had a great fondness for her, and I've certainly watched her shows and probably picked up her magazine or so. And then to hear the real loose frequency of her using the N-word, not only from the point of view of using it with her family members, she's in business with her brother. Her brother also owns a restaurant, and it was an employee of the brother's restaurant, who happens to be white, by the way, who brought suit against the Paula Deen enterprise. So that's how she got pulled into this. The white employee was saying, I don't want my nieces and nephews who are biracial to be around this kind of language, and for that reason she filed suit. So in the court cases and the testimony, that's when Paula Deen actually said, yes, I've used the N-word more than once, and she certainly used it in the context of business, family, friends, and colleagues, and it's just been a war storm after that. Why, from your perspective, Mary Frances Winters, is this so relevant and impactful, not only in business circles, but also in social circles with Paula Deen?
You know, I take a different tact on this, and I think it is so impactful because obviously Paula Deen didn't have a clue of how offensive this was, because if she did, she would not have testified in court that she had used the word. If she had thought that she was going to lose her empire and have all of these endorsements being taken from her, she certainly would not have said that she had used it. So in my way of thinking, it is really about a lot of people who still are living in the past and who don't understand, who I don't, for whatever reason, I don't see how you couldn't, but don't understand how offensive that word is. Now, I think if you've not had the experience, perhaps you don't. If she's 66 years old, I'm 62 years old, but maybe in the way that she grew up, that term was just used randomly and around the house. And then she came out and said, well, but the young black employees who work for me, the young black men, use that word too. So I'm confused. And I think sometimes we do confuse people because
right.
I think within race, you know, we use the N-word. I don't think it's right at all, but we sometimes do.
Nope.
So my thing is, rather than firing Paula Deen, rather than taking everything away from Paula Deen, let's use this as an opportunity to learn and to teach. I do not believe
right.
Paula Deen's intent was in any way malicious. I don't know if she's a racist or not. I'm sure she has some, you know, we all have our biases and whatnot. But I believe
True.
That we should have used that as an opportunity to really have some deep dialogue as opposed to firing her. I mean, Paula Deen's still going to be rich, you know, regardless. And I just don't think when we punish people like that, we've done it before. That's what we do. When somebody makes a diversity faux pas, we fire them. That shuts down dialogue and it shuts down conversation. That's why nobody wants to talk about race, because I'm saying, some white person, I may say the wrong thing. If I say the wrong thing, then somebody's going to come and fire me, so I'm not going to say anything.
Correct.
Let's not talk about
correct.
It.
Correct. Right.
And so I think that
and
we need to understand and listen to Paula Deen. Why did you do this? Why did you think that this was okay to say, as opposed to just assuming that she should know that it's wrong? I'm
right.
going to give the woman the benefit of the doubt and say, if she knew that it was going to cause all of this, you certainly could know she wouldn't have said it, because she didn't want to lose all those millions of dollars.
She would have cleaned it up big time, definitely. But again, she's from the South. She's from Georgia. I've lived in Georgia. My people are from Georgia. And when you're outside of Atlanta, then you are really into Georgia and the Deep South. And I say that because in her testimony, I read much of her testimony, and she talked about, I think, her grandfather or great-grandfather, one, who was a Confederate soldier who had slaves and lost all of the slaves because of the Civil War ending badly on his behalf. And he went in the garage, I believe, and killed himself when he realized he was economically ruined. So obviously, from a family perspective, that's going to have a huge impact on you in terms of your income level for generations to come. She actually told that story in the testimony. So again, I go back to this book again, which has everything to do with race and how race has been played out in the society. And you're correct, Mary Frances, this is a teachable moment in terms of Paula Deen. So where do we go from here? What would you prescribe, since so many people are running away from race and they feel that we're post-racial, or why are you bringing that up again? That's a dead issue. Or my people weren't here when all that stuff happened. My folks didn't come over until the 30s or the 40s from Europe or whatever. Where do we head, our country, our nation, our world, as this dialogue and this discussion is so badly needed? Mary Frances, help us out with this.
Well, until we see what we call, as you know well know, Carol, the business case, or what I like to call the sustainability case for inclusion, I don't think it's going to go anywhere. But when we look at the scarce natural resources, and that some of those resources are in Africa and Asia and other places, when we look at all economists who say unless women's economic status is improved, the status of the whole world will never improve. And so it's about understanding mutuality, that we are inextricably linked to one another, as Dr. Martin Luther King said. Well, I can't quote his quote, but you know, he basically says that we're all connected in some way. And so it is about the interdependency. It is about recognizing that when kids don't graduate from when there's a high proportion of Black and Hispanic kids who are not graduating from high school, that is going to impact the entire viability of our whole system in the future, because they don't have the skills that we need for them to do the job. So I see it as the demise of the United States economy. And I'm going to say this right on radio. If we don't get this right, this is a key thing that is keeping us back. Race, the us and them, the incarceration rates that are so very high. I just wrote a blog today that showed that for marijuana use, Blacks and Hispanics are 5 and 6 times more likely to go to jail, even though their marijuana use is no higher than whites. They have the same marijuana use, but they go to jail for it. So all of these glaring statistics which show these us and them inequities, it's going to be the demise of our society. We need everybody to be productive. So I think that's got to get to people first. And then secondly, we have to recognize that we're all carrying baggage. I carry baggage. I'm a Black woman. I carry a lot of baggage too. And we have to work on ourselves first. So many people don't want to work on themselves. It's somebody else's problem. We have to first understand that each of us has a role to play in recognizing the biases, the judgments that we make. I know I got my own judgments that I'm working on as well. Until we get to that point, Carol, I don't think anything – we can't legislate this away. We cannot legislate it away. This is really truly a heart. It's really truly going into the core of our being, but it is a survival thing as well.
Well, yeah, I think you bring such good points to the table in terms of if we don't understand the, again, I'm going to go back because I love history and I think that history has everything to do with this conversation. If we don't understand history and admit it and have these open discussions around not only the United States but outside of the United States, if we don't have these kind of open discussions, then, again, it will be swept under the rug and we will miss opportunities to really embrace one another on an equal basis regardless of our ethnicity. Another book, because I'm real big in terms of preparing my listeners for what you need to read and what you need to pay attention to, another old book that's still in print by a gentleman who died in 1963, W.E.B. Du Bois. The book is called The Soul of Black Folks, The Souls of Black Folks. It was originally written around 1903. But again, he, in his artful and elegant way, he was one of the first persons to receive a PhD from Harvard University, went on to have an instrumental role with the NAACP and was an outspoken person, and unfortunately just got sick and tired of the U.S., left, and died in Accra, Ghana. But he's written, he was a prolific writer, but his book, again, at the turn of the 20th century, really artfully talked about the impact of race, not only in how it's embedded in black people, but its impact on society. So again, I go back to Doris Kearns Goodwin's book that was recently written that traces the history back to the first half of the 1800s, W.E.B. Du Bois, and then these incidences that we have talked about today that just keep cropping up. Mary Frances Winters, please give your contact information for our friends to check you out online.
Thank you, Carol. It's www.wintersgroup.com is our is the website, and we are. I can also be found on Twitter, Mary Frances Winters, and Facebook as well, Mary Frances Winters, wintersgroup.com.
Great. My friend of many years and certainly a very insightful professional, diversity professional who has operated in this space for many years and traveling outside of the United States too. Mary Frances Winters, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Carol, and happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. Take care. All righty. Well, we continue to talk about this because it's important. And again, I would encourage you to go and get Doris Kearns Goodwin's book. Other books like it, there are countless books written on Lincoln, but how this is artfully done and can be used from a teaching perspective. And then obviously Steven Spielberg's brilliant movie that was based on this book, he pulls out the piece that really talks about the introduction and then finally the passage of the 13th Amendment. And that gave black people citizenship, and that was happening when the war was raging. And then to look at Lincoln, who actually entered into office and then literally within 6 weeks later, the Civil War started. So he was truly a war president, but embedded in all of that was race. And then you fast forward and you look at what's taking place today. The micro inequities are definitely there. We need to talk about it. Diversity is not going anywhere. I believe that race should be an integral part of all diversity concepts and programs, even those who try to push away from, well, we've talked about race and gender, we need to talk about ideas and thoughts. Those are great. But it does not mean that the discussion about race and gender are not even more important. And now, more than ever, with people like Cory Booker, who is now hopefully going to become the new U.S. Senator from New Jersey, you're going to have more blacks in key spots. You're going to have decision makers and the backlash that is going to happen, the name-calling, the insults, the kind of things that are going to mischaracterize someone's integrity and reputation. It's when we have these kinds of open conversations and dialogues about things that are right, things that are ambiguous, things that are not true, how people like Paula Deen can learn through diversity initiatives. She's not a bad person. She's just a person who made very inappropriate remarks. And rap artists, and people in my family and others who use the N-word, that's not right either. So the open discussion that we need to have is, I think, even more relevant and important today more than ever. We're going to keep this conversation going forward. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week. This is Carol Copeland Thomas signing off.